This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Sharp Money, VSIN, the sports betting network. As we welcome you in on a Thursday, I'm Patrick Maher, live from Los Angeles. Dustin Sweetelson, the big guy, downtown at the D, Fremont Street. Let's go ahead and throw up the list, let you know what's on tap today on the program. Eric Kratz coming up in about 44 minutes, former Major League Baseball catcher, Foul Territory host. He's going to join. We'll get some picks tonight in the Major League Baseball slate. Josh Applebaum, our buddy, VSIN betting analyst, is going to join. Mike Petraglia. So what we want to do is as we get closer and closer to the kickoff of the NFL season, we're going to get you a good team preview from somebody on the beat and give you an inside look at these teams. Today, we're going to go with Mike on the Bengals. In the third hour, George Bremer is going to join us and talk about the Colts. Two teams with some juice going into the season as well. It looks like the Colts actually may play their starters, and we'll get into that coming up in just a little bit. And a part of the show, a staple, Aaron Halterman is going to join us on the program as well. We do have some family plays to get to. As we open up the show, I say hi to Dustin Sweetelson. We do have, I would say breaking news, and this one was a shocker. We were having our little pre-show conversation today, and you got the news via Twitter that there was a rare in-division trade. So the Washington Commanders, and I know a couple of things about this, so we'll lay it out, and the impact on the Commanders and the team in division, the Commanders have traded Jahan Dotson to the Philadelphia Eagles. So there's a lot to unpack here. One is this. I listened to a legendary show every morning. It's called The Junkies, and they are in D.C., in the DMV. They are the sports show, and so they're pretty dialed in, and I love the program. I listen to them, so I tend to know about what's happening with the inner workings of the Commanders, and the Jahan Dotson thing is fascinating, and there's a couple of reasons why. A couple of years ago, Jahan Dotson was a first-round draft pick out of Penn State, and his first year was stellar. As a rookie, I thought he could potentially be a wide receiver one. And that's with the Terry McLaurin, who is wide receiver one there with the Commanders. So his first year was awesome. And then last year, I kind of gave him mulligan because it was Ron Rivera. Ron was on his way out. And Eric Bieniemy. And no offense to Eric Bieniemy, but his offense, his protection schemes were terrible. Sam Howell was throwing the football. It was just a mess. So I didn't really put a ton into the dip in production from Jahan Dotson last year. And I thought, my gosh, with Jaden Daniels and with Cliff Kingsbury, Jahan Dotson's going to have a huge year. That brings us to what I do know. I know in the preseason week one, Dotson ran like 30 snaps. And then the very next day, Dan Quinn came out and said, we are searching for wide receiver two. And I was like, that's weird. Dotson just ran 30 snaps. He has been wide receiver two since he's a rookie, and Dan Quinn with the new regime came out and literally said he ain't it. And I thought, well, maybe it's a motivational tactic. So I started thinking, and then the next thing you know, I heard another interview with Quinn, and he was just like, yeah, no, Jahan's a good kid. And that was the answer. And so now it comes out that the Commanders have shipped Jahan Dotson to in-division rivals, the Eagles. So they're getting back. So again, Dotson, a first-round draft pick a couple of years ago. They are getting back a third-rounder in 2025 and two seventh-rounders in 2025 as well. The Eagles are sending a fifth-rounder back to the Commanders. So a couple of things here. One, it's just Howie Roseman. Whatever you think of the guy, he continues to play chess while everybody's playing checkers. And I love this Eagles team this year. I think the changes at coordinator, I think a Jalen Hurts attitude adjustment, Sirianni another year on the job, and just what they've added is incredible. And then if you take a look at wide receiver three now, because that's exactly what Jahan Dotson is, and he can play on the outside, he can play on the inside, he can do a multitude of things. But if you think about a wide receiver three behind Brown and Smith and Dotson, and he's under contract for two more years. You don't have to pay him any money. He's making $2.5 million over the next 2 years. So he's cheap, and you got him under contract for two more years. I was shocked by this move. Now, there's a couple of reasons why. One, I have a bet on the Commanders, And I didn't love this move because the Commanders, even with Dotson, their weakness right now is wide receiver depth. We'll get into that in a second. Two, shocked that they made a trade in division. You know, they must think so little of Dotson that he's not going to help the Eagles that they traded him in division, but that's exactly what happened. Because if you take a look right now at the Commanders' depth chart, Terry McLaurin, if we're being honest, Terry McLaurin's probably the nicest guy in the NFL. He is a wide receiver 1B. Okay, there are ones, Tyreek Hill, Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, you can go on and on. Now, McLaurin's very good, but is he that? I don't think so, but he's certainly a spectacular wide receiver. Dyami Brown is like literally a guy that has done nothing since he's been drafted, I believe, out of North Carolina. He's essentially wide receiver 2 at this point, and then you got a rookie in McCaffrey. Oh, by the way, they went and signed Martavis Bryant, who I don't even know, cuts are coming up here. I don't even know if he makes a squad. So he hasn't played a snap since 2018. So right now, the wide receivers are McLaurin, Brown, McCaffrey, and then, you know, a Brian Pringle, who's a journeyman. That's not great. On the other side, in division, you've got Brown, Smith, and now Dotson working into that offense with Saquon, and obviously a very good offensive front. So that is where we start the program. The win total on the Commanders is 6.5. To make the postseason, they're plus 260, miss minus 340. In division, which we were just discussing, they are 9-1. I go to the big guy. So that's just, again, from listening to the program, literally hearing Dan Quinn interviewed on the Juckies as we get a nice shot from Larry zooming in on the big guy at the D. Look, is he a huge name? Not because of what happened in year number 2 where he had a big significant dip. But if you take a look at his numbers as a rookie, he was awesome. Known as a great route runner. And just the fact that it was in division, a little bit of a shocker as we begin the program.
A great philosopher once said, my husband cannot throw and catch the ball, in reference to Tom Brady, Gisele Bündchen. How can we fairly assess Jahan Dotson as a wide receiver when he's played for a franchise that has had 8 different starters at quarterback since 2017? Since letting Kirk Cousins walk away at the end of that run, they've had 13 different players take snaps at quarterback for the Washington Commanders. So I don't think we can fairly assess what Jahan Dotson is and what he could potentially be. I mean, you mentioned it. He popped off the screen very early in his career. There's a lot of potential there. He's still a young guy. He has not had any consistency at all in his career in terms of coaching, in terms of quarterback play, in terms of play calling and his role. And if I was any team and I was making a trade with the Philadelphia Eagles, I'd be very concerned that Howie Roseman covets a player that I have, because he's looking at them as someone that he can capitalize and maximize their talents with, whereas I've underachieved with this player. So if I'm Washington, I'm concerned that a team in my division that's fully loaded thinks that they can unlock that potential in Dotson.
I think it's a great point. I kind of view Roseman as like a Dombrowski now. There's certain guys in each league where if they're calling, you're just kind of, you're dubious.
Yeah.
You're skeptical. Why do you want the player? We don't want the player. Maybe we should have a conversation about said player if Howie Roseman wants him. And I totally would agree with you there. Again, 7 touchdowns as a rookie. It's nothing to sneeze at. You know, 49 catches last year, 4 touchdowns. So production, yards and average catch-wise went down quite a bit as far as the average catch. But he's a guy that can stretch the field. He had a 61-yard reception as a rook. He had a 33 long last year. And again, there was pressure on Dotson with the Commanders because he had to step up and be wide receiver 2, though they have gotten better at tight end. With the Eagles, he now has 0 pressure, and they can get tricky with him as well because he's a guy that you can spread out. He's a guy that you can use on the inside and trick it up a little bit. So I think it's a great move by the Eagles. You know, he's known as a good attitude person, so I was a little surprised if he was moved based on the fact that he might have been, you know, not happy with the way Quinn was approaching his role. But this is what we know. So I thought we'd start here because I actually do think for the Eagles, adding depth at wide receiver for a team that's potentially Super Bowl bound, or that's the aspiration, is a big move for them.
Yeah, on the other side, though, how concerned are you now? You love this Commanders team. Great. And while he's underachieved, it's not totally his fault as a wide receiver here for Jahan Dotson. So now Luke McCaffrey, who played at, I believe, Rice in college. It's not like, I know the last name, I know the dad, I know the brother. Like, we all know the McCaffreys at this point. The camera's constantly on them during Christian's games. But Luke McCaffrey, we're acting like he's just going to slot in and step up and be a number two receiver for this team his first year out of a smaller school. I don't totally understand the thought process here. You would think a veteran like Dotson would be helpful in getting a guy like Jaden Daniels acclimated to the NFL. Things are going to be very different for Jaden Daniels. Jaden Daniels had two NFL receivers at LSU. He actually has a worse receiving core his first year as a pro.
It's really not close.
So I don't totally understand the mindset here. It just feels like you're giving up on the player. We mismanaged. Things went wrong. It was mostly the old regime. But let's just both move on here instead of trying to squeeze what's ever left. I don't really understand the mindset.
Well, 2 years for Dotson, 84 receptions. Deami Brown, who's now wide receiver two, 3 years, 21 catches. So what does that tell you? It tells you it's a culture thing. And Dan Quinn is Mr. Backward Hat. He's building this team with his peeps. So it tells you he just didn't fit into the culture. Because talent-wise, you don't get rid of a 24-year-old wide receiver that you don't have to pay any money for the next 2 years because he's under the rookie deal. So that's where we start. The Eagles in division grab Jahan Dotson to be wide receiver three. And the Commanders move on, which does not help with our $1,000 bet when I have the Commanders. Aside from that, we've got live bullets in the first hour. We're going to have a play on Tampa Bay, Oakland in Major League Baseball. Also, we've got two preseason games tonight. Pretty interesting who's sitting and who's starting. You're going to need to know this information. You got Indy at Cincinnati, and you've got Chicago at Kansas City. So we'll get to those two preseason games and some live bullets with baseball coming up. Sharp Money, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Okay, Sharp Money, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, as we welcome you back. Packed show with guests coming up, including one talking Major League Baseball in about 29 minutes. We've got Tampa Bay, Oakland starting in a little less than that. So we're going to have a couple plays in that Major League Baseball game as we give you what's happening right now on the program. Just a couple of things before we get to the preseason games tonight. Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Patrick Maher. Hope you're having a nice week. Again, it's kind of crazy to think, but we do have college football starting 2 days from now, officially. And the game that we've been monitoring, big guy, that is Florida State, Georgia Tech. Now, you thought, look, I think once the public money starts to come in, I think we're going to have this number push up with the public side in Florida State. Yesterday, I'll give you an example. A book like DraftKings had dropped all the way down to 10. Now, DraftKings opened 13.5. It looks like they opened 13. Other books opened Florida State 13.5. Now, Florida State's back up to 10.5. at DraftKings, and I'm looking right now. It's pretty much painted. I do see in Jersey a couple of shops showing 11. So we're starting to see that number push back up just a little bit here. Again, we went through the breakdown yesterday. We'll have more on this game tomorrow. There's a lot. Obviously, it's a conference matchup. I think both teams are going to be conservative on offense. You have a total of 55.5. Florida State, the weakness last year was running the football. They bring the back in from Alabama. They've got a great offensive line, 190-plus starts returning for Florida State. Defensively, I just think in the trenches is where they're going to be too much. But the eight starters returning for Georgia Tech, there's some buzz there that we haven't seen since Johnson down in Atlanta with Georgia Tech. So I think it's a very interesting game. How the teams travel matters as well. I'll get your thought on that in just a second. Just quickly wanted to give the other numbers. SMU is laying a big price at Nevada. It's going to be a tough year in Reno this year. SMU's offense, we know, is awesome. They're laying 24.5. Montana State, New Mexico right now. Montana State's laying 13.5 on the road, deservedly so. And then should we check on Sunday, has Delaware State arrived in Hawaii yet? They had some issues with the bus, missed a plane, not great for a long travel. And Delaware State, they're headed to Hawaii to collect a paycheck. We had off the board. I'm showing shops right now anywhere from 38.5 with Hawaii all the way up to 40.5. And no surprise here, big guy, a big total of 57.5.
Yeah, you want to know where the money's going in any of these games, VSiN.com has the exclusive DraftKings betting split. So pop open the betting splits tab on VSiN.com. I see Florida State, Georgia Tech. 75% of the bets are on Florida State, but only on 59% of the money. So we look on the Georgia Tech side of things, we're getting just 25% of the bets, but 41% of the handle looking at the Yellow Jackets. That obviously jumps off the page. That means there is sharp money coming on the Yellow Jackets in that matchup. Some other notes that jump out when I look at the betting splits, you mentioned Hawaii and the travel issues for Delaware State. 85% of the money on 65% of the bets going towards Hawaii.
Yeah, and that's why you've seen that number jump. Let's see where it opened. So Hawaii did, you know, Hawaii did open 40.5. Still 40.5 at a couple of shops, though, has dipped. So a little reverse line movement down to 39.5 at a few shops. Mostly 39.5s, if I'm being fair. So maybe some Delaware State love coming in right now, if that's what you want to call it. Okay. Have a little fun with that. Let's transition to what we've got tonight. Now, a correlative situation in the preseason. If you've been betting the overs, you probably have lost your house because the unders have been cashing at a crazy clip. And if you think logically, and I've been betting these unders blindly. So what are we, 12-4 week one of the preseason to the under, 14-2 in week two, so last week of the preseason to the under. And again, a correlation, you're looking for dogs to the unders, favorites to the overs. So we've had more dogs cash as well in the preseason. And look, so much emphasis is put on these joint practices. So by the time we get to the preseason games, you have watered down offenses. Coaches have already unloaded the clip when it comes to the scrimmages, and you get a watered down offense and oftentimes starters not playing. Let's start with the first one on tap, and that is Indy-Cincinnati. They kick off about 20 minutes before Chicago and Kansas City. So we have right now, and you tell me if you're looking at anything differently, you can find, if you want to lay it with Indy, you see a 6.5 mostly. If you want to take it with Cincinnati, you can find a 7. I see Parks in Pennsylvania is showing a 7. You know, DraftKings, FanDuel, they're showing 6.5 with Indy Lane at 34-34.5 on the total. Couple things here. Indy is expected to play the starters. So Steichen, he's got a bug, so they're expected to play the starters. And Zach Taylor, conversely, and this is why you see the number imbalance here, Cincinnati essentially has said the starters won't play. Jake Browning's done nothing in his opportunities, so I guess you would assume you're going to see some extended Logan Woodside minutes, who had 2 picks versus the Bears. They just haven't been able. The only time the Bengals, now this may not shock you, have moved the ball in the preseason was the one Joe Burrow drive where they drove the length of the field for a touchdown. And that's all they needed to see. And now they bubble wrap everybody and get to week one. That's it. Indy in a little bit of a different spot. Steichen has said he's going to play the starters.
Yeah, he potentially is going to play starters on both sides of the ball. That's what's interesting, and that's why we're getting a massive line move. Open Indy -2, now we're looking at 6.5. Makes a lot of sense. We're going to see a lot of those starters early in the first half. I think he said about 1.25 was the report that I read. Richardson's going to play, and apparently he didn't look very good in joint practices. But if you're handicapping this game and you want to place a bet on the full game, Anthony Richardson really isn't relevant to you. It's the rest of the Colts depth chart that jumps out to me. I think they have a massive edge under center when you look at the options that they have versus what Cincinnati's going to throw out there and Logan Woodside and Rocky Lombardi. So you got Flacco. Maybe we see a little bit of Flacco. We're not totally sure yet. But also, Keaton Slovis, very experienced college guy with a big arm. Think he has potential here in the league to stick. Maybe not obviously a starter, but he's got a role as a backup. Jason Bean, who's an athletic dynamo at the quarterback position, there's a spot for him on a roster, potentially on game days too, just because he is so quick. And then Sam Ehlinger, who in preseason football, Sam Ehlinger is the type of quarterback you want. He's mobile. He makes good decisions. He's not sexy. He's not a starter in the league, but he does have some experience playing in real NFL games. I just think the depth is so much better quarterback-wise for Indy. They're going to play those defensive starters early. And I like Indy tonight. I'm going to use them in a parlay. I'll give you the other leg a little bit later, but I'm going to go first half Indy. Minus 370 is the first leg of what will end up being a plus money parlay because Woodside's making mistakes. The numbers are a little deceptive.
Browning's been gross, too.
Yeah, well, and he's hurt. He's dealing with a rib thing. And Rocky Lombardi stinks. So Woodside, two interceptions versus Chicago, as you mentioned. And he's going to take on Indy's starting defense that I think the Indy defense is actually really good. I have to look at the Colts in the first half in some way. And by the way, you have to lay 6.5 in the first half at the book.
That's a great point. And I wanted to explain to new bettors. So if you're taking a look at the full game first half splits in the preseason, they're markedly different than what you're going to see in the regular season. So full game right now, and this has to do with what Dustin said, the quarterback rotation. So full game right now, Indianapolis Colts, 6.5. I'm showing 6 in the first half, $1.25 juice. You can find 6.5s as well. See, when the regular season starts, essentially you're going to split that full game in half.
Yeah.
So if you look at Indy being a 6.5-point favorite full game, you're probably going to see 3.5s when it comes to the first half. It's not always consistently that way, but you're generally going to split the full game for the first half because you know consistently who's playing in the game. In the preseason, like you said, these numbers are mostly going to mirror each other as they do here.
Yeah, I'm interested to see Anthony Richardson just because all those reports about during this the joint practices didn't look great. And then Cam Taylor-Britt had the quote, all he does is run. So he wasn't impressed either. I know it's the game doesn't matter, but I think a lot of people in the betting space are very high on these Colts, and rightfully so, just because the upside of Richardson. I've been a Richardson stan since day one, but I'm a little bit concerned based on the reports we're hearing this week.
Yeah, there's a couple of things with Richardson. He's in the perfect spot.
Yes.
Because if I'm going to talk about McVay, Shanahan, and Ben Johnson, I think you have to put Steichen right underneath them in that next tier as far as a play caller. We need another year to really see what he can do. But he can coach him up, and he can call an offense. The Richardson thing is fascinating because I'm not sure anybody has a bigger arm. Don't think he's overly accurate. Looked good because he's a crazy good athlete. The one thing a lot of people are looking at in the Colts market is the running back market and Jonathan Taylor to lead the league in rushing because he's going to get a lot of carries if he stays healthy.
Well, and you have to remember that Jonathan Taylor had the contract thing and then a health thing. There was a lot hanging over him over the last couple seasons. Finally going to get full preseason from Jonathan Taylor, getting ready, ramping up. And also, he really fits what Steichen wants to do from a zone blocking perspective. He is better in a zone blocking scheme throughout his career. So I think there's just a perfect fit, the RPO, the opportunity to have situations where he only has to make one guy miss and potentially take off downfield. It's a really dangerous looking Indy offense with a lot of upside.
The Bears are 3-0 in the pre. The Chiefs are 0-2. I'm sure the Chiefs are nervous that they haven't won a preseason game. They take on one another tonight. Arrowhead will get to that. Plus, baseball, Tampa Bay, Oakland next. Sharp Money, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, as we welcome you back. Got a ton to do on a Thursday program. Jahan Dotson, former first-round pick, Commanders, traded to the Eagles in division. Kind of a shocker there. We'll have more on that coming up in just a bit. We just got done talking about Indianapolis and Cincinnati. Week 3 of the preseason, we've got Chicago and Kansas City. We'll get to that in a second. We do have a baseball game starting in just about 6 minutes, so we should talk about the Rays and the A's. Just quickly give you an updated idea of what's happening in Major League Baseball right now. The Yankees, bottom seven, lead the Guardians 5-0. The Rockies trail the Nats in Washington 8-1. Zippy Zippy, bottom five at the Cards with the Brewers visiting. And the Cubs beating up on my Tigers 6-0, middle five in Chicago. Now, the Rays and the Athletics. Let's discuss this, Dustin, because this is actually quite interesting. Tampa Bay is a roach. Because they're a pretty resilient team. And they started off poorly this year. Cash has done a very good job with this team. They're always undermanned. They're always under-talented. They've won 5 of 6. They're in the mix, if you want to put it that way, against an A's team that, you know, at 54-73, kind of feels weird to say it, but maybe overachieved this year. It's not a great offense. It's a power-hitting offense. They got 155 home runs. Outside of that, it's not a great pitching staff. It's not a great bullpen, but they've won more than you would have assumed this point of the season. Here's what I will say about the matchup today. And it's not like Jeffrey Springs and your boy Beto are going to break the world. However, the last time out for Springs against the D-backs was very good. The last time out for Beto against the Giants was very good. For some reason, the A's don't score on Thursdays. It's a weird trend, but I point it out because I think the Rays and A's are both going to really struggle to get offenses going here, and that's going to be the difference. At 7.5, you can find we're showing 7, but there's plenty of 7.5s in the market. I'm going to go under Rays, A's, 7.5, big guy.
Okay, so the Oakland A's have indeed overachieved. A lot of it post All-Star break, really good 17-12. Their preseason win total was 56.5. They're at 54 wins, so they're going to go over that number. So they were a team that added a bunch of veterans, and you just had to assume at some point some of these younger guys would play better, like Brent Rooker, who's been awesome for them, especially the last few weeks. I really like Oakland in this matchup. Plus $1.05 on Oakland and Beto. He's been great his last three starts. He's got a 1-0 ERA, at least 6 innings pitched in each of those starts, a 3.25 home ERA where he's better there in Oakland. And then the Oakland bats are a big part of this handicap. 10th in OPS against southpaws. Rooker, the guy I just mentioned, he's got a 10.50 OPS against lefties. Andujar on a smaller size, 53 at-bats, is hitting .415. Bleda, who is red hot, 3 homers in his last 6 games, he's got an 8.41 OPS against lefties. And we're going against Jeffrey Springs, who's been solid at home, but his one start on the road was at St. Louis, and he got roughed up by the Cardinals, who are not very good against lefties. All of this points to me backing the Oakland A's at a nice plus 105.
And Springs is a reliever, so that might give a reason why. And, you know, they like to mix up the starters, relievers. So I am sold. Now, I already bet the under 7.5. There are sevens in the market, but you can find a 7.5 if you're going under in this game. You just sold me. I'm betting the A's as well. I'm going to double down in this one as a family, big guy.
Yeah, well, if we're right, they'll be one step closer, not to the edge, but their win total going over the number.
That's actually a team in Oakland that we were having the conversation before the season started. It was actually three teams. It was Colorado, it was Chicago, and it was Oakland, and talking about who was going to finish with the worst record in MLB. The A's have been leaps and bounds better than the other two. And some promise, but with some young players that you actually care about.
We pointed it out very early in the year. You could tell it was a different vibe. That you used the word punchy, and that always stood with me.
Punchy.
That they were a punchy team, that they'd get you one. Like, you weren't just going to go into Oakland and sweep them like the last few years. I think they have a really interesting dilemma on their hands with how they handle this rebuild, when they want to be ready for Vegas, how they're going to handle Sacramento. I would, in this offseason, if I was them, I would maximize the potential trade for Mason Miller, that electric closer they have. What's the point of a great closer if you're not really winning games? You can find a closer. In fact, this organization used to do nothing but build closers from random relievers like Jason Isringhausen and Billy Koch back in the day. They will find another closer. Instead, if you can get a position player or a starter or both that can help you more often than a Mason Miller, I think that would expedite this rebuild for Oakland and get them closer to playing winning baseball.
I think we all congratulate you on expedite.
It was a tough one.
We do.
I was concerned. It came in my head and I went.
It didn't, you know what? You didn't even stumble. I thought it was solid. I'm proud of you. Right now, Tampa Bay 6.5 out, third wild card. Again, they don't do anything all that well, but here they are in the mix.
Yeah.
Like, if you look at the power numbers, I believe the A's on the year, 155 bombs. The Rays probably 115. They're a big difference in power. The Rays just, they win games in a tough division as well.
They made some interesting moves at the deadline, like trading Isak Paredes because they didn't want to play him for a versatile guy with a lot of upside, and Chris Morel from Chicago. Like, I got what they were doing. I understood the approach. It took me a little bit to get there. It's always finances with them. If you want to understand like the motivation behind everything they do, it's always money, right? That's always the number one objective.
The irony. It's funny that you say the A's, how they're going to handle Sacramento and then Las Vegas, because we could have the same conversation about how the Rays are going to handle Sacramento and then to Vegas. They just happen to be sticking around in St. Petersburg for at least another year.
I'm curious if baseball said, And I don't have the total perfect vibe on the locals here, but my general vibe is they don't want another Bay Area reject because the Raiders were that, and the Raiders are different as a brand. But I wonder if the report was the Rays were coming to Vegas versus the Oakland A's, would the vibe be different?
I'm down on Vegas and their acceptance of baseball. Somebody like Jonathan Von Tobel, a host here on VSiN, who's a big-time sports fan, they don't want a baseball team. And that makes no sense to me. Locals in Las Vegas, like, VGK matters because born and raised, I get it. There hasn't really been an adoption of the Raiders yet. They don't want the A's. It's just interesting to me.
I think they do. I just think they want an expansion. They don't want another reject. They don't want, because it feels like they're being held hostage somehow in like the negotiations with the leagues. It's, hey, we're just going to move to Vegas. And I actually thought Mike Palm had a great idea a couple weeks ago when we did Palm versus the big guy. He said, make it a 31st city and have rotating teams have series out here in Vegas. And then you'll get the tourists coming to town to see their teams play, you know, one time a year.
That just broke my brain. Here's what I'll say. If you were to give a Las Vegas native, a local, born and raised, if you were to say, do you want the A's to move to Las Vegas or would you rather have less traffic? They'd take less traffic.
They would take
less
traffic.
And that bums me out.
They would. But they would take the A's if it meant they didn't have the F1 race in town.
The obsession, and I'll admit, I lived in Vegas for 3 years. It's pretty crazy traffic. You know why? There's about 7 roads.
Yeah, and they were built just, when there was like a quarter of the people living here.
I'm not a city planner, but it's basically a city in a valley that didn't have a lot of people. Now it's got a ton of people, and they don't have a lot of roads.
Yep.
So that leads to traffic. Again, not a city planner, but that leads, not good with logistics, leads to traffic.
Too many people, too many cars, not enough roads. It's basic math right there.
Yep. We got another job if we need one. It's a good possibility.
Good side hustle.
Let's go Chicago, Kansas City quickly. We'll continue with the cap on the second of two preseason games tonight. The Bears 3-0, I mentioned it. Key players are going to rest, as they should. You're going to see Tyson Bagent and Brett Rypien at quarterback. The Chiefs. Carson Wentz and Chris Oladokun, your boy, who? He's a 26-year-old dude that was a bull, he was a bulldog, and he was a jackrabbit. Went to South Florida, then Samford, then South Dakota State. So if you don't know the third stringer right now for the Chiefs, don't worry. You'll get to see him tonight.
That's a lot of travel, a lot of moving vans for our guy Oladokun. 76.9% so far in the preseason, though, for him. On the other side, Chicago. Bagent, 7.9 yards per attempt, 73% passing. I don't know how much we see of him. The thing that makes me want to side with Chicago early in this one is the battle for the third QB spot. Austin Reed versus Brett Rypien. I think we're going to get meaningful football from those guys. And I think there's a big picture approach when you look at these two teams. The Chiefs have nothing left to prove, especially in the preseason. I mean, they could almost sleepwalk through part of the regular season and no one would hold it against them. The Bears need to set a tone. It's like when you tell me the words that you say about yourself, positive or negative, you eventually become. I think for the Bears, treating a preseason football game like it matters, trying to win, Eberflus is 7-2 straight up in preseason football. I think they're trying to win. I think they're a little bit deeper for this style of a game. I'm going to back the Bears in the first half as the second half of my parlay.
I'm going to back the Bears on the money line. Did you just compare the Bears to James K. Polk in Manifest Destiny? I think you did. Eric Kratz is next. Okay, Sharp Money, Dustin Sweetelson. I'm Patrick Maher. It's VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, as we welcome you back. A big day in Major League Baseball to discuss. Eric Kratz, former Major League Baseball catcher. He's got the podcast Foul Territory, which is awesome. You can find it on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. Also the book, The Tao of the Backup Catcher, Playing Baseball for the Love of the Game. This is one of the great stories. My man played 11 seasons and started at 30. So make sure you check that out. Progressive Guest Line. Eric, thank you for the time. We have to start here. Paul Skeens goes tonight for Pittsburgh. Now, in our betting community, it's a big deal. Because on August 1st, to win Rookie of the Year, he was minus 4,200. Jackson Merrill is now the favorite at minus 150 and Skeens plus 120 because the assumption is Skeens is going to be shut down. I'd like to know your philosophy on what you would do with the rookie.
Well, first of all, I'm so glad I got Jackson Merrill at plus 250 because I saw the Paul Skeens Pirates falling. Not Paul Skeens, but the Paul Skeens Pirates falling. So plus 250 with Jackson Merrill for NL rookie. I love when it keeps going into the minus category. But what do I see with the pitching? What do I see? You know what? Because it's the Pirates, you sit there and you go, are they going to do the wrong thing for this pitcher? Because they've done the wrong thing for so many pitchers. And I say no, because I was there. I was in the Pirates organization when they drafted Gerrit Cole, when they had Jameson Taillon, when Tyler Glasnow made his debut. I was there. Like, I saw these things, and it's a different group now. So I think the Pirates are going to make the right choices or the best choices that they can make right now, but they're in a lose-lose situation. If they shut him down, he's not going to win the NL Rookie of the Year or have a chance at all. And if they keep him going and he gets hurt, then they look, well, why didn't you shut him down? What's the point? You're 10 games out. You're 7 out of the wild card. Like, it's, you sit there and you go, as the Pirates, you have to talk to Paul Skeens, not like he's a rookie, like he is the cornerstone of your organization, a guy that guys are going to want to sign with the Pirates to come and play alongside. And you need to talk to him and see what he feels, how his arm feels, how his body feels. And if he's at all nervous, it's time to shut him down or lower his innings, whatever it is, so that you can ramp it up for next year. Because here's the issue. You shut it. Let's say this is his last start. He's going to go over his 7.5 K prop. And you say, you're done. You don't have a September. You don't have a single start in September. And now all of a sudden, next year, you're like, hey, we're a contending team. I want you to pitch till August 31st. That's not fair or good for his development either. So it's somewhere in between there, and that's a fine line that I'm glad I don't have to pick.
Eric, that would just absolutely decimate the vibes for Pirates fans, because at least every fifth day people want to go watch him play, and they're not used to, in the recent years, of having a reason to go to that beautiful ballpark in Pittsburgh. Another team that potentially the vibes are kind of bad as well, the Baltimore Orioles. Lost 2 of 3 to the Mets. Corbin Burns on the bump tonight, but he doesn't look right. They just sent Trevor Rogers down. Eflin hit the IL. Soto and Dominguez have been awful in that bullpen. How do the Baltimore Orioles get things right?
Because they are that elite in the lineup. And all good teams go through this. The issue is, if the Orioles don't win the World Series, it is going to be, I told you so, up and down the board, because this team has, like, some teams have money to make moves. The Dodgers, the Phillies, the Red Sox, the Yankees, whether they do or they don't, they have it. The Cubs have money. They don't make moves, whatever. It's another discussion. The Orioles have something that's worth more than money. They have prospects. Organizations view and value prospects way more than they value dollars, and way, way more than they value World Series championships. And to me, if the Orioles don't win a World Series, they don't get to a World Series this year, let alone, I mean, if they don't make the playoffs, I don't think that's going to happen, but they don't get as far as their fans think, it's a missed opportunity, because this is the team that is going to win it for them. They went out and got Trevor Rogers. I liked the pickup, but I didn't like it to say, okay, well, you don't have to go get Tanner Scott. Tanner Scott is a solidified piece. You know that man is going to come in the ninth inning, which you don't have a ninth inning piece right now. You have four really good seventh and eighth inning pieces. So Anthony Dominguez will figure it out. Gregory Soto will run through times where he'll throw strikes. He hasn't shown it yet. Sir Anthony Dominguez had a few good outings until he gave up two solo home runs to walk it off with the Mets against the Mets. Like that happens. The Mets know him. That's a, you know, it's a division opponent that he's faced. Craig Kimbrel can be elite. Can he also struggle? Absolutely. And you know that because he has been in the ninth inning in a lot of situations. So teams have trusted him with that responsibility, but he can be a great piece. Yennier Cano can be a great piece. None of them are the shutdown closer that Tanner Scott is or could be, and a solidified piece, but they went and got cute and picked up a Trevor Rogers, picked up a Sir Anthony, and didn't get those pieces plus Tanner Scott because they didn't want to dip into what I said before was the most valuable commodity, prospects.
Talking baseball, Eric Kratz. Just a quick flex again. He might be working at VSiN soon. He got Jackson Merrill at plus 250 NL Rookie of the Year. He's now laying $1.50. So that's Mr. Kratz for you. Now, Diamondbacks. I'm looking at the market World Series. A couple weeks ago, we bet them 30-1. They're sitting 20-1. Tell us why we're going to be rich. Do you like the Snakes?
I do like the Snakes. I like them because of so much that I don't think they've tapped into yet. And I'm going to go starting pitching. Now, Brandon Pfaadt is doing better than I think people thought, but I also see the maturation of Brandon Pfaadt. But the pitching, they've gone in and out of the closer's role. We talk about closers, and that's the playoffs, is closers and your seventh and eighth inning guys. But Paul Sewald is currently not their closer. So this guy was closing games for a National League Championship team last year in the Diamondbacks, so you know he can do it. You know he is trustworthy in his strike throwing, and so he'll be in there. But they're doing this whole run without the best Zach Gallen, without Merrill Kelly until a few starts ago. He's come off the IL. And they're surging all this time. A great series against the Marlins. And people say, oh, who cares? It's the Marlins. The Marlins are a big league team that are putting up a lot of runs. If you would love some overs, peep at the Marlins, because I've been absolutely cashing in on steak dinners with the overs with the Marlins, because they will give up some runs, but they're scoring runs. And they went in there, and they beat the Marlins. And I say that, why is that significant? Because they do not have, in my opinion, the MVP of the National League, Ketel Marte, in the lineup right now. And that is the only reason I'm not saying double your money, even at 20-1, is I don't know what's going on with Ketel Marte. That ankle, he tried to play on it, and now he's on the IL. Without him, I get it. They still have Corbin Carroll. They have Lourdes Gurriel. They have Christian Walker coming back. They'll have Josh Bell coming off the bench. They have, I mean, Jake McCarthy. This dude is Clutch McClutcherson. And they don't have Marte, and they need him. They need you. Every team needs your MVP. You take him out, and any team's MVP, let alone a league MVP, you take him out of the lineup, and I just don't want to put any more money down on the team. So I haven't yet, but I can queue it up in my deposit that I'm waiting to put a little on him. If he comes back and he shows me he's the right-handed hitting Ketel Marte, dealing bags, doing what he does, okay, I'm in then.
I just want to give Foul Territory a quick plug because they might be in front of the news on Scott Service, a great video of Eric Kratz potentially talking about the M's. Go over there and check it out. Of course, Eric Kratz, Foul Territory, you can find it on YouTube, wherever you get your podcast. The Tao of the Backup Catcher is the book. Eric Kratz 31 on Twitter. Let's go, Jackson Merrill. Thanks for the time, Eric. You're the best.
Oh, yeah, do it, Jackson. Anybody loves plus 250, right?
You got a better number than we did. There's Eric Kratz. Now, Dustin, I just went over to Foul Territory, and they're talking about Scott Service. Is this official?
I did not see that. That is news to
me.
Well,
they're talking about him potentially getting fired. Am I getting trolled?
No, they are. He was fired. You're right.
Scott Service out with the Mariners. We're coming back with Josh Applebaum.